You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
The world is filled with many questions, such as, do giants exist?
What is junk DNA? Does it mean that you're trash?
Do you ever wonder if aliens have underwater bases in our oceans, and that's why there are so many UFO sightings off the coasts of islands all over the world?
How serious even is climate change, and when should we start building our rafts?
Hello, everyone. You may recognize me as Gabby from the History of Everything podcast.
And my name is Brenna, and you don't recognize me from anything yet.
Together, we're two scientists who explore the answers to these questions and many, many more in our new podcast,
Mystery of Everything,
available everywhere you get your podcasts.
Monster House presents.
Monster Talk is proud to be a part of the Airwave Media family, home of such shows as the Daily Meditation Podcast, The Accidental Creative, and I Know What Scares You. If you'd like to advertise on this show, contact sales at advertisecast.com.
For generations, the Thorns have been a family of tremendous wealth, position, and power. The perfect marriage of Ambassador Robert Thorne and his wife Catherine was fulfilled by the birth of their son, Damien. And then, when the child was 5 years old, something terrible happened.
I'm sure you recognize that clip from the trailer of the 1976 film, The Omen, and that voice is the great Percy Rodriguez. The Omen's one of those films often credited with fueling the satanic panic of the 1980s. The film made the very word omen far more sinister in the public imagination than the concept probably deserves. Certainly there are death omens, but there's lots of omens for all sorts of things, as we're about to hear.
It's actually quite unlike anything we've ever seen before.
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man.
In Loch Ness, a 24-mile-long bottomless lake in the highlands of Scotland, it's a creature known as the Loch Ness Monster.
Monster Talk. Welcome to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
I'm very excited about the next two episodes of Monster Talk. Our guest for both is author Chris Woodyard, and she's written some really fascinating stuff on many topics that Monster Talk listeners will find right in our sweet spot. For this week's episode, we're going to be discussing omens, and next week she'll be back for a discussion of women in black. I hope you stick around for both because, speaking for myself, I learned a lot of new stuff in these two episodes, and it's always exciting for me to discover new and fascinating legends and lore. In the 1976 film, The Omen, there's a grim picture of the cultural role of these symbols. An omen's basically any symbol that inspires the belief that it's a sign of some future outcome. And we'll be talking about a lot of different kinds of omens in this discussion, but they seem to be almost anything that you might observe or notice. And as we will discuss in this interview, they're not tools of divination. This isn't like spinning an apple stem to find the first letter of your future mate's name, and this isn't like cartomancy or any of the other rituals people use to try to divine the future. This is what some people call portents, signs and symbols, otherwise mundane, but for something atypical that gives them significance and powerfully suggests they have a meaning that needs to be found in order to explain it. A skeptical view of omens might simply explain them away as post hoc connections, a kind of fitting of the symbol to the outcome that actually happens. But there's no single simple explanation, because sometimes omens are clearly identified before the event happens. For example, an omen might portend some ill outcome and be worried about by all who are informed of it. But when calamity next strikes, then that omen's going to be recalled by everyone and thus fulfill its prophetic potential. But that too would be a kind of post hoc rationalization, and it also doesn't explain omens in a single tidy package. They're often metaphorical, they're sometimes very poetical, and they're usually steeped in symbolism of cultural significance to the experiencers. They seem to be a lot of things to a lot of people, but always involving a warning, portending some fated outcome, and even if the omen turns out to be a failure, it would not shock me to find that the omen is still considered valid, but perhaps through action, luck, or divine intervention, was just narrowly escaped.
Monster Talk.
Chris, I've got a little blurb about your books, but perhaps you might like to introduce yourself and give us a bio.
I'm Chris Woodyard, and I'm a writer and a historian in Ohio, an undisclosed location in Ohio. And I write about ghosts, and I write about fashion history, and I write about death. I'm the author of a number of books on the Ohio ghost scene called the Haunted Ohio series. And I've also written a book called The Victorian Book of the Dead, which is coffins, crypts, and crape, all kinds of curiosities in Victorian mourning.
Fantastic. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here.
Now, we had some signs that you might be coming. But...
Oh, no. Omens.
So Chris and I met on Twitter or X or whatever it's called today and got kind of chatting behind the scenes about death omens. So, Chris, we wanted to have you on the show to talk about this topic and with regards to, I guess, history in general. I mean, omens certainly go back into history a very long way, but you've written papers and a lot of books too treating this topic in particular, and so we just wanted to run through some examples of omens and why these things are omens in popular culture or throughout history. So you, with your article, which is available on academia.edu, you begin by talking about animals as omens. So I wonder if we could maybe start there.
Right. They're some of my very favorites, although I kind of cringe when I hear the owls hooting in the backyard, because they're always regarded as harbingers of death. the grave diggers used to say they're a half-alive, half-dead bird, and if they could get at the dead, they'd eat them. And they're just so sinister, and the screech owls in particular, and the barn owls, they sound like they're being knifed. It's just a horrific sound. It's like a banshee, and I think that's probably why the owl has gotten such a bad reputation. Birds in general, you know, they're reflective of the soul. So I think that's why birds in particular have a death omen status. I was taught as a child that if a bird taps on the window, someone is going to die. And of course, we have birds tapping on our window all the time. So it just makes me, you know, very afraid, sometimes just reflexive. It's silly. But the birds in particular have that reputation as well. Of course, we've got black dogs. They're some of my particular favorites. There's a really rather grim story about this family in England.
sorry.
They're all grim stories.
Well, I was going to say the Harry Potter, you know, they call the dog the Grim.
Oh, dear. That was inadvertent. That was inadvertent. I'm sorry.
No. I welcome any puns, accidental or intentional. Okay. So
I love puns, too, but yeah. that one was not intended. But this happened in 1884, and there was a tradition in this family that before a death, a large black dog would appear to some of the relations. Mm-hmm. And this woman did not know about this tradition, and they had a sick child, and the doctors didn't think it was anything serious. And the mother went up to check on the baby and said, "Oh, yeah, baby's sleeping." But she went back downstairs and said to her husband, "Baby's asleep, but there's a large black dog lying under the bed. Would you go and drive it away?" And the father knew what this meant. He hadn't told her anything about this. And so he went up and there's no dog, but the child was not sleeping. The child was dead.
Oh, so sad.
Yeah.
And when I think of black dogs too, I think of depression.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
And I guess Winston Churchill, I think, used to talk about the black dog and as depression. And
I have a question about omens in general. I always think of them as portending something ill, but do they fit into the bigger category of divination, or are they something separate? Is it more symbolic? In other words, like some people use animal intestines or other means deliberately deliberate divination versus this seems like it's thrust upon people and they find significance in the symbolism.
Yes. I think you're absolutely right that it's a separate thing from trying to predict the future, you know, getting a bowl of water out and looking into it like you're scrying. But no, this seems to be, as you say, something thrust upon people and then completely out of the blue in most cases. I mean, in some cases, of course, they have a family banshee or they have a family creature that comes around to tell about the death. But in general, these are sort of out of the blue, and they're often just one-offs.
You also mentioned fish being a death omen, and that's one I'd never heard of.
That one was really quite odd, and this has to do with the royal family of Hawaii. It's a shoal of red fish that comes into the bay, and when they see this huge, vast numbers of fish, the nets were just breaking. The Hawaiians said that the king was doomed, and he died maybe 20 days later, I guess. This was in 1891. Yeah, very unusual. I do have one more, though, that's sort of maritime. It's a devil fish, you know, a big manta ray with those horns that make them look so sinister. And one of these was following a ship, and they couldn't figure out why it was following the ship, but they realized the captain was being poisoned, and the thing just followed the ship until he died, and they buried him at sea, and then the thing disappeared. So they said he had gone with the devil fish.
Wow.
Have you heard an omen that if a bird comes into your house, it means someone's going to die?
Yes, indeed. Yeah. That's again a really popular one.
It affected me growing up. I had a bird got into our house and my mother freaked out. Now she's very fundamentalist Christian, but this idea that a bird meant one of us was going to die. She pulled everybody into the bed. My dad was doing something. I don't know where he was at, but she made all of us kids get in bed with her and just like huddled, like we're just waiting for the Grim Reaper. It was the scariest.
Oh, no.
Yeah, it was so scary.
And, what kind of a bird was it?
It was something small, like a sparrow, a chickadee, some little thing. It was not anything impressive or, you know, we've had a couple of birds in our house here as an adult, and I did not terrify my children. We just got a towel, caught it, and put the bird back outside. So
good for you, not starring from life.
Well, I think that's interesting too, because it doesn't seem like it's every kind of bird that could be a death omen, and that maybe something cute like a hummingbird, not necessarily, or a sparrow, but if it's a
cassowary.
Yeah, or a vulture.
There actually was a story about a man, they had the door open and this vulture walked in, and it just, you know, he was sick and he of course immediately died because it was a death omen. Robins were kind of the death bird. If they appeared in your house, or they'd come fluttering around your pillow, and then they weren't really there, it was like a phantom robin. That was another signal that the person was about to die. That's one thing about these animals is sometimes they just disappear. They're not real. And then there's other ones that seem to be really corporeal. So I've heard things, the spiritualists used to say, a spirit entered into that living bird and sent them as a death omen, as opposed to it being a phantom bird.
Have you looked at the relationship between this kind of animal as an omen and with the idea of psychopomps? or you know, birds like I was thinking about the you know, it's in horror circles, H.P. Lovecraft wrote about whippoorwills being like birds that would announce the death of someone and possibly take their soul away.
Well, the dove, of course, is considered to be something of a psychopomp because the Holy Spirit dove. So you fly away with the dove. And there was one family in England that had doves as their particular death omen, and they drove them away. They didn't want them in the neighborhood, and they kept coming back because whenever they saw them, somebody would die.
In your article, you also mentioned bees, and I wasn't really familiar with bees being death omens.
There's a custom called telling the bees. When someone dies, you have to go and tell the bees that the master is dead, or the head of the house is dead, or there's been a death in the household, or there's been a wedding in the household. You just have to keep the bees informed. And sometimes they'll drape crepe on the bee skeps. So that is one association of bees with death. But if a swarm of bees comes into your yard and it alights on a dead tree or on a dead branch or just on a fence post that isn't a living, breathing tree, there'll be a death in the family of the owner of that property during the year.
Hmm. Well, certainly if you're attacked by a swarm of bees.
Yeah, it only takes one bee if you're allergic. Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say that's a death omen.
For sure. Yeah.
They did it with plants. They would drape their house plants in crepe, or they would go tell the cows. And it was something about if you don't inform them, they're going to fly away, or they're going to die themselves, or they're going to not be prosper. Things won't prosper. The plants will die or won't deliver.
That's becoming very true.
Well, yeah.
All the issues with bees and dying.
Yes, unfortunately.
Yeah, colony collapse disorder is no joke. I heard something, and this is something I'll have to look up and offline, put an insert in if there's something to it. But I'd heard there'd been some breakthroughs and maybe they were on the rebound, but I don't know, you know. The news is real good at letting you know when things are terrible, but they're not so good at letting you know things have eased up.
Improved, yeah. Very true. Yeah.
A quick insert here. The colony collapse disorder scare first took off in about 2006 when reports of bee colonies dying mysteriously was first reported in the media. This is a complicated story because I think the media narrative was looking for the mysterious bee killer. But it turned out to be caused by a variety of converging behaviors and conditions, not one single simple cause. Since that first wave of reporting, there was a continued decline in the bee populations for a while, but by 2016, it seemed like the colonies were increasing in their populations. Colony collapse disorder is still a serious concern, but we didn't lose all our bees, largely because it wasn't a single unstoppable cause, but rather a series of mitigatable antagonists that could be dealt with. If you would like to promote bee health but don't want to raise bees, a couple of things you could do is try to not apply pesticides to flowering plants that are under your care during the daylight hours when bees are harvesting nectar. And you can plant more flowering plants. And I know I'm not going to turn America off of its obsession with monoculture lawns, but letting some flowering weeds thrive in your backyard does help bees and butterflies. But if you'd like more ideas about how you can help bees thrive, try checking out the North American Pollinator Protection Campaign. Its website is pollinator.org.
I know what we've got lots of types of omens to talk about.
Long list.
But I was just curious about the practice itself. It seems like I definitely know it from, you know, European culture. And I think I've seen it in some Asian movies where people saw symbols that were significant. Is it global? Is it worldwide? Does everybody have some?
It is. Yes. I'm unfortunately not as well schooled in other cultures. I'm more European and American centered in my studies. But I have read other things. There's one in particular that I'm always fascinated by is if in Japan you dream about fire, that's a good luck omen. And it's sort of like dreams going by reverse. If you dream about a wedding, there'll be a funeral. If you dream about a funeral, there'll be a wedding. And I'm thinking how much fire has ravaged the Japanese cities because of the paper and wooden structures. but they dream about fire and it's good luck.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I've heard with a lot of interpretations of dreams, you know, people will talk about death in dreams being rebirth or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I could certainly imagine that. But
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, I'm Paul Giamatti.
And I'm Stephen Asma.
Each week on Chinwag, we dig into the weird topics you wonder about, that you care about, the stuff none of us are totally sure of, like the Bermuda Triangle, Mothman, consciousness, philosophy, UFOs, ghosts, or, say, Bigfoot.
So who's to say that there's not alien species that are Sasquatch?
Like, I've seen a ghost, and I would hear something walking and breathing.
Maybe every path is right. I will accept as a premise that every path is right.
That is a face on Mars. Eyes, nose. It kind of looked like Wilson the volleyball.
Some people enjoy the waves or whatever crashing, and I enjoy listening to a quantum physics audiobook.
I do think there are many things in the world that we just don't understand and probably won't understand.
That's our whole show.
So join us every Wednesday on all major podcast platforms and find us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at ChinwagPod and Wagon.
As Blake said, we've got this list of omens, and it'd be interesting to talk about a few more of them.
For sure.
Yeah, for example, maybe plants, you write about roses and apples and even potatoes being death omens. It seems like everything can be an omen.
It does seem that way. And I just wonder, when I was doing the collecting of ghost stories, there was one gentleman who called me and everything in his life was ghostly. He said, oh, I heard something at the back door, and I opened the door, and what do you think I saw? It was something ghostly. It was a puppy. And I was like, yeah, okay, it was a puppy. It wasn't a ghost. He was determined that everything was going to be ghostly. And I think a lot of people also wanted everything to be some kind of an omen.
Yeah.
It gives you a sense of control, or you know what's at least you can plan ahead, even if it's bad news.
Well, I've described it. Some people have a low threshold for the supernatural. Like, in other words, they'll see it as a supernatural thing where other people would just
haunted
see it as,
people.
Yeah, haunted people. Well, and my mom has a low threshold for the miraculous. My mom thinks everything's a mirror. Every good thing is from God. Every bad thing is from Satan. And that's not metaphorical. Right. She really believes that. Right. Like, you know, so. And again, I don't want to say like I'm knocking my mom. I love my mom. But I'm just telling you it's a mindset with which I'm deeply familiar.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. Well, we were talking about plants. Roses, if you have roses blooming out of season, it's a very bad omen, particularly white roses. Apples, if you have an apple tree that is blossoming at the same time as you have apples on it, that is a death omen.
Wow.
There was an awful story of a woman who was in a garden. This was an 18th century story. She was pregnant and she leaned up against this apple tree and they noticed that there was only one apple on the tree and all the other apples fell off as she stood there. And one of her friends said to the husband, I'm sorry, but I think this is a very bad omen. The one apple left on the tree is going to be your surviving child.
Yikes.
And sure enough, she died in childbirth, but the child survived. And they actually named the tree after her. They named it Elizabeth.
Wow, what a story.
It's a very, very creepy story.
These are all creepy stories.
Well, I try.
Have a potato.
Thank you. I should love a potato.
Potatoes. This is from Adams County, Illinois. The woman said she put a couple of large potatoes in the stove to bake, and when she went to get them, one of the potatoes, just one of them, was all scooped out, like somebody had taken a spoon and just scooped out everything but the skin. She said she was the only one in the house, and she said it was a token for her husband dropped dead the next day. And I look at that and I think that reminds me of like the virtue that goes out of the food that's stolen by the fairies. You know, it looks like good food, but it's just toadstools and excrement.
Yeah. I don't read the ingredients. That's the trick, you know.
But this makes me think of superstitions with sports people and how if they eat a certain food or wear a certain T-shirt or socks or something like that and have a win a match, then they link that success to whatever it was that they did. And so I can imagine people having something bad happen and then linking it to whatever incidents surrounding that. And then suddenly, I guess it kind of diffuses it around throughout society, and then other people start believing that too. So I could see these spreading.
Exactly. Sort of a contagion of folklore.
Yes, yeah, for
Although,
sure.
It's interesting though, because some of these stories, for example, this sort of skeptical, rational person might say, well, a bad thing happened and they thought back and they, was anything unusual before this event? And remember we saw that thing. And that makes perfect sense. But some of these stories you're telling involve people seeing a thing and saying, no, this right here, this portends bad outcome. And then a bad outcome happens, which again, a skeptic might say, well, the next bad thing will automatically be related to that thing. But it's also, it's super creepy.
Well, a good example of that is Second Sight in the Highlands. And one of my favorite examples, because it also has mortuary symbolism in it, is where you see a shroud or a winding sheet on a person. And the higher it is on their body, the less time they have to live. One fellow was out in the field, and the overseer was praising this young woman for working really hard and said what a great worker she was. And the man with the second sight said, well, yeah, she's a really good worker, but I'm sorry to say this is her last harvest. He says, what do you mean? She's in perfect health. Well, I see her shroud upon her, and it's well above her breast. And sure enough, she got a fever and died in a couple of weeks. It was very specific, too, with these shrouds being a certain height.
Yeah.
I haven't heard of that either. I wonder if it's somehow connected to religion, to Christianity, and...
I don't think so. It's more just the custom of shrouding the dead, because that was pretty much what you were buried in. You didn't always have a coffin. They just would shroud you and carry you to the graveyard.
That makes sense.
Of course, anything we say is going to sound like a blanket explanation. So,
covers it like a dust sheet.
Still so many items on the list. You mentioned clocks, and I had a friend who was gifted a clock because the original owner claimed it was haunted and it stopped at a certain time, and that. Time was the exact moment of death of a relative. And you hear lots of stories of clocks stopping at the point of the moment of death or something like that. So I could see that being a death omen somehow.
Oh, yeah, that one was such a common one. And there's that song, of course, Grandfather's Clock, and the clock stopped never to go again when the old man died.
Oh, my goodness gracious. Are those the lyrics? I had a favorite toy when I was a kid that played that song, and I didn't know the words.
What? Oh, really?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. It fascinated me, but that is amazing. Okay, well,
there you go.
That's
fine.
I didn't even know the song. As soon as you said it, I could absolutely see how it goes to the music. I know exactly what that song is. Oh, my goodness gracious.
That's creepy.
Wow.
The song we're discussing is called The Grandfather Clock, and it was written by Henry Clay Work back in 1876. Work was already a successful songwriter who had self-taught and broke into the business of songwriting and selling his sheet music job after a job setting musical type in the sheet music printing business. This idea of clocks stopping at the death of their owner was absolutely popularized from this song. And the inspiration for the song is said to have been from a real clock that was at the George Hotel in Piercebridge, North Yorkshire, England. The hotel still stands today and is now managed by Best Western, but it's still a classic English wayside lodging by the looks of it. According to legend, the hotel was run by two brothers, and there was a large clock in the lobby. After the demise of one of the brothers, the clock began to irrevocably fail to keep time accurately, and when the second brother died, the clock is said to have stopped altogether. Mr. Work stayed at that hotel, and he heard the story and was inspired to write the much more romantically themed version of the story that's in the lyrics of the song. The Grandfather Clock was such a popular tune that he ended up selling more than 1 million copies of the sheet music. Surely that makes it a hit, right? But the real measure of how big of a hit it was is simply this. Before his song's 1870s chart busting, all of that kind of clock were referred to as long case clocks. But today, because of his song, we all call them grandfather clocks. We've done many episodes of Monster Talk, but this one solved a mystery of one of my very favorite toys way back when I was just a toddler. It was a Fisher-Price Music Box Tick-Tock clock. They were actually first developed in the 1960s, and they were designed to teach you several important concepts around clocks and time, all the while playing the famous song by Mr. Work. This little moment of research has brought me so much simple and wholesome joy.
The custom, too, was when someone died, you did stop the clock at the time of death, and there are funeral arrangements that have floral clocks with paper faces with movable hands, so you can set them to the time of death. So it was very significant.
Mm-hmm. It's a method of record keeping. And until everybody switched to digital watches, it used to be a forensic tool to see what time the watch stopped in a, you'd be in a car accident or something would happen, your watch would stop, and that's, you know, you could tell when it happened. That that is wild. Okay. Your research had looked into a lot of, you talked about Victorian funerary symbolism, and some of these omens are tied to things like having visions of coffins and funerals.
Oh, yes.
Can you, and of course, Phantom Hearses is a favorite. So can you talk a little bit about some of those?
Oh, yes. Yeah. That one is a particular favorite. They drive up to the door and you hear it come up and you open the door. And of course, there's nobody there. And there was one where this woman was sitting by her husband's deathbed, and they said, just come away and sit by another part of the house and look out the window. And she looks out the window and here's a hearse coming up. And she's like, who ordered the hearse? I didn't ask for that hearse. And the hearse drove up to the door. They opened the doors, whatever the creatures were that were driving it. They pulled out a coffin, and then eventually they put the coffin back in, shut the doors, and ran away. And they went into the next door room where the man was dying, and of course he was dead. But that thing was taking him away, literally. You talk about psychopomps. There's the hearse psychopomp.
And then the next day when it all happened for real, it was a rehearsal.
Oh dear.
Yeah, yep.
I have to be quicker with you, yes. He's a master.
Yeah,
he is. I have something. It's something.
Yep, something.
Our listeners say it's a condition. What?
Did the other people in the house see the hearse as well?
Well, the nurse saw it. She was sitting with the wife. They'd sort of taken a little breather while he was sick, and saw the hearse.
Oh, I was going to say, this is making me think of Blake, one of our favorite tales, the tale of Lord Dufferin.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yes.
Absolutely.
Yes.
You know of that?
More. Yes. For one more.
What a kindred spirit you are.
the creature, well, the story with Lord Dufferin is looking out the window and you see a hearse and basically pulled up in the backyard with this rather distorted or a deformed man standing there, and he's beckoning to you, like, come on, come on, always room for one more. Mm-hmm. And the woman who sees this, it's usually a woman, recoils in horror, and he drives away. And then she's getting into an elevator in some large building the next day or within the next week, and here's the elevator operator looks identical to the man with the hearse, and he beckons and says, always room for one more. And she recoils, and of course the elevator crashes to its doom. That's one version.
Yeah.
It's there's a lot of different versions of the same story.
Yeah.
Even though Lord Dufferin would tell it as his own.
Exactly. Yes. Well, and of course it shows up on The Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Which famously, and super creepy. Mm-hmm. They only did one season, I think, where they shot with video instead of film, and that was from that season. It looks a little weird, but it's still a powerful story.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. It is.
It's a classic.
I don't know why I'm sharing Twilight Zone trivia, but there we go. For more behind the scenes on The Twilight Zone.
Another thing with hearses is that you see phantom funerals. And these are really interesting because they usually mimic the funeral that is to come. Someone,
right.
And you either see them or you hear them. You never see and hear them at the same time. So whatever it is, you hear the tread and you hear a hymn being sung, or you see certain people carrying the coffin. And then, of course, the next whatever cycle it takes for it to come, the next mm-hmm. funeral looks exactly like that.
I've heard of that with Abraham Lincoln's funeral. I'd heard that there was a phantom train that appeared.
Yes. I always used to look for that train. My grandparents' house was right next to a train track, and I always looked. I was terrified I was going to see this train go by, and it supposedly was. It had the coffin on it, and it had a band of skeletal musicians playing
right.
instruments, and there were soldiers mounting guard on it, and every year in April, I think it was, and the trainmen would get down and watch it go by, and it was all very, very, very spooky. They tried to find it here in Ohio because the funeral train, you know, took a long way to get to Illinois, and it drove through some of the towns in Ohio.
I've been with drivers like that. I know. Yeah. So there's obviously hundreds, if not thousands, of things that people, you know, see as omens. When you're trying to sort of put this all together and how we find meaning from it, what do you think's at play here? Like, what is it all about? What are omens really all about? I know that they may pretend death, but what does it mean to humans?
I think it really is about control. It's about trying to assert some kind of control over what we can't control, which is death.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, while some of us may find the idea of preparing for death distasteful, this wasn't an abstract idea to the people of the 19th and 20th century. They wanted to have a good death. They wanted to have everybody around the bed, and they wanted all their affairs wrapped up and a will made and everything all proper. And if you knew you were going to die, it was easier. In fact, there were people who said, well, I'm going to die at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. And they'd go out and they'd buy their coffin and their shroud and they'd make all their arrangements. And sure enough, they'd die at 8 o'clock on Tuesday. Not sure how they worked that, but.
But that is a really thought provoking and thoughtful answer. That's great.
It really is.
And speaking of having control. I think I'm going to exercise some control here and say this is the end of part one. So tune in next mm-hmm. week as we continue this interview with part mm-hmm. two, which is all about women in black.
Monster Talk.
You've been listening to Monster Talk, the science show about monsters. I'm Blake Smith.
And I'm Karen Stolzner.
You just heard an interview with author Chris Woodyard discussing the topic of omens. Check out our show notes for links to her books and writing, as well as some further reading about things that we discussed in this episode. Chris will be back next week, and you don't want to miss it, to discuss women in black. And this was one of the few times we've had a guest completely surprise me with something I'd never read about, so come back for that. By the way, The Patreon platform had a glitch this past month where there was a problem with the bank upon which the system processes payments. And if you happen to be a patron of the show, your credit card company may have, out an abundance of digital caution, flagged last month's transaction as fraud and kicked you out of the app or canceled your payment. As a show incredibly dependent upon your patronage, if you happen to be one of our sponsors, I hope you'll take a moment and double check that your patronage level is still working at the intended level of support. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Monster Talk. Each episode, we strive to bring you the very best in monster-related content with a focus on bringing scientific skepticism into the conversation. If you enjoy Monster Talk, we now have a variety of ways to support the show, all with convenient links at monstertalk.org/support. That's monstertalk.org/support. We have links there to our Patreon page as well as a donation button. Another great way to support the show is to buy books from our Amazon Monster Talk wish list, which directly helps us with our research. We love used books very much, so don't feel compelled to buy new ones, and we love Kindle so we can share our digital libraries with each other. And finally, without spending any money at all, you can support us by leaving a positive review at iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Positive reviews help keep us visible in iTunes, which is a great way to help us find new listeners. And please share our show on your favorite social media platforms. Monster Talk theme music is by Peach Stealing Monkeys. Thanks again for taking the time to listen to us. We also like to listen to you. If you have questions or comments, the Patreon page is a great place to stay in touch, but you can also send us email at monstertalk.org. Just use Blake@monstertalk.org for me and Karen@monstertalk.org for, you guessed it, for Karen. Thanks.
Been a Monster House presentation.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.